Hello, this is Jamie Peterson with the Herald and Review for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. We're reading from the front page, a story about Illinois elections out of Springfield, Capital News, Illinois. GOP seeking answers. Republicans ask how 545 non-U.S. citizens registered to vote. Republican lawmakers in Illinois are demanding answers from Secretary of State Jesse White about how 545 self-identified non-U.S. citizens were mistakenly registered to vote through the state's new automatic registration system, including 16 who actually cast ballots in 2018 and 2019. In a letter to Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan, five Republicans who serve on the House Executive Committee called the erroneous registrations a serious breach of supposed protections put in place to ensure the integrity of our voter rolls in the state of Illinois. This is an absurd lack of compliance with state law, surfacing less than 3 weeks from the opening of early voting for our state's 2020 general primary election, the Republicans wrote. Given this, we are requesting an immediate hearing of the House Executive Committee to investigate this situation and to hear testimony directly from Secretary of State Jesse White, officials of the State Board of Elections, representatives from our local election authorities, and others concerned with the situation. The letter was signed by Representatives Tim Butler of Springfield, Keith Wheeler of Oswego, Joe Sosnowski of Rockford, Grant Wehrle of Naperville, and Ryan Spain of Peoria. In addition, all 19 Republican senators signed a letter directly addressed to White asking, among other things, what assurances he can provide that such an error won't happen again. Madigan's office did not respond to a request for comment, but Democratic Senator Andy Mayner of Bunker Hill issued a statement Tuesday saying he might call for Senate hearings. There is absolutely no room for administrative ineptitude when it comes to properly conducting our election system, Mayner said. Democrats and Republicans came together and unanimously approved automatic voter registration, and we expect it to be done correctly. If it takes a Senate committee hearing to get those answers, that's the course I'll pursue. In 2017, Illinois lawmakers unanimously passed Senate Bill 1933, which provides for automatic voter registration whenever someone applies for or renews a driver's license. Also on the front page, out of Decatur, Godson, King driven by faith to take action. The phrase, "I have a dream," was not originally written into the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s famous speech. The night before that August 1963 event, King and associates worked on his speech to refine it, and he was delivering it the next day when one of the people near him on the stage whispered, "Talk about the dream." King, employing his considerable oratory powers, honed in the pulpit, turned that whisper into, "I have a dream," and improvised it into the speech. King's godson, Jonathan Jackson, son of civil rights activist the Reverend Jesse Jackson, spoke about the iconic speech as the featured speaker at Richland Community College on Tuesday during the college's Martin Luther King Jr. Day commemoration. He was invited by the Reverend Courtney Carson, director of Essential Skills and Community Relations at Richland. While introducing Jackson, Sheriff Tony Brown said the crown jewel of the civil rights movement was the right to vote. "I stand here today as your sheriff because I won an election by one vote," Brown said. "If anyone says your vote doesn't count, think about that." The one-vote victory of Brown, a Democrat who had been a lieutenant and veteran of the department, was declared in November 2018, after all the provisional and mail-in ballots were counted. His Republican challenger, Jim Root, also a lieutenant and sheriff's office veteran, had held a 99-vote advantage on Election Day. Root has contested the results, and the legal case is pending. Jackson began his talk with Carson's turnaround from one of the Decatur 7 high school students whose fight at a football game and subsequent expulsions brought Jesse Jackson and Rainbow Push Coalition to town and put Decatur into the national news in 1999. The local Department of Education school board said these young men were banned from school, Jackson said. They saw no more value in their lives. That school board expelled Courtney, and now he's vice president of that school board. From there, Jackson focused on King and how faith drove and inspired his life. "The title of Reverend is a higher calling than doctor," Jackson said. We separate church and state, Jackson said, but you cannot separate faith from action. King affirmed everyone's humanity and believed that when African Americans made gains in society, all of society benefited, he said. He was committed to social salvation, seeing wrongs in society and being committed to change them, Jackson said. As Brown said, voting rights are a hallmark of citizenship, Jackson said. Voters steer the course of the country. Voters serve on juries. Without a vote, a person is not fully a citizen, he said. The persistent question is, what are we going to do for others? Jackson said. Paraphrasing King's speech, he said, gradualism leads to do-nothingism, and the challenge of the present generation is to right wrongs so that one day their children will have to ask them to describe poverty and racism. We should be able to eliminate those, he said. Martin Luther King took something that was flawed, our democracy, and made it more beautiful. After Jackson's talks, Carson invited the audience to ask questions. Student Aggie Kopp, who is planning to be a minister, asked Jackson for encouraging words. Her insistence on speaking of her conviction, she said, has caused her to lose friendships. Jackson said the same thing has happened to him and told her they could be friends. It takes courage to take a stand, he said. After the event, Kopp said she will continue to stand up for the truth. Do we want to please men or please God? She said, referring to a favorite Bible verse. You have to speak the truth in love, especially when you know the stakes and the grace of God. On the bottom of page 1, from Decatur Public Transit, by Garrett Karsten. New buses carrying passengers through Decatur. City celebrates 14 vehicles newly added to transit system. The City of Decatur on Tuesday celebrated 14 new buses recently added to its public transit system, an effort to replace a majority of its aging fleet. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said the need to replace aging buses became especially apparent after buses broke down in 2019. The expected life of a transit bus is either 15 years or 500,000 miles. The average life of those being replaced are 17.4 years, 12 having been purchased in 2001, according to Moore Wolf, adding that all but one bus went over 700,000 miles. Decatur makes it every possible mile out of something like these buses, Moore Wolf said. We tried to keep them running by having engines redone. We had to borrow a bus from Champaign this year because we were in such dire straits. A ceremony Tuesday at the Penny Severns Transfer Center at 353 East William Street was held to dedicate the new buses and attended by U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican Taylorville, who initially announced $4.6 million funding the city would receive through a Federal Transit Administration grant program. State Senator Andy Mayner, who also spoke Tuesday, helped to match additional funding for the new buses, officials said. The Decatur City Council in April voted to buy up to 18 new buses. Officials said at the time that they would purchase 14 immediately with an option to buy 4 more in 2 years. The Decatur Public Transit System has a total of 22 operational buses, and no changes will be made to the 15 bus routes operating Monday through Saturday. The new models can also fit up to 2 wheelchairs, but the system that holds the wheelchairs in place can be moved aside more easily. Some features are entirely new to Decatur buses, like bicycle transportation racks. They're equipped with magnetic clamps designed to securely latch up to 2 bikes to the front of the bus. Up to 2 wheelchairs can be secured inside. The new buses are also 30 feet in length, 5 feet shorter than the older ones. The floors were designed to be slip-resistant, and the new seats are made of plastic, much easier to clean and maintain, according to Keith Shaw. Shaw, approaching 5 years as a city bus driver, got his first chance to drive one of the new buses Monday. He said he and other drivers appreciated updates of safety measures. For instance, they're installed with park brakes that place the bus in neutral automatically. On the older buses, it was a two-step where you would park brake and put it in neutral, Shaw said. I think it's a great feature because you don't want the bus rolling off on you, or sometimes it'll slip your mind to put it in neutral. With all the improvements downtown, you want new buses downtown too, he added. Pretty buses, pretty downtown. It all works out together. One of the retired buses will be given to Richland Community College to help train students earning their commercial driver's licenses. The rest will be either donated, auctioned off, or salvaged for parts, according to John Ramones, Decatur Public Transit General Manager. Going forward, the goal is to maintain transit service and look for ways to improve it. Transit system leaders are looking at safety features with devices like Mobileye or iCam that help identify driving performances and behavior of bus drivers. Ramona said another focus is enhancing routes to focus more on time. I know we have a lot of obstacles, like trains. That's our number one holdup in delays, Ramona said. We're looking at possibly diverting some of the routes. When it's so condensed in time, it puts a strain on the drivers. On to page 3 and local and state news. Guilty pleas lead to 15 years in prison. Out of Decatur by Kennedy Nolan. A 33-year-old man who prosecutors say had an unknown accomplice sent him nearly 2 pounds of methamphetamine from Mexico using the U.S. Postal Service, pleaded guilty to 2 separate drug charges in Macon County Circuit Court on Tuesday. Alvin Bond of Decatur was sentenced to 11 years in prison after pleading guilty to a charge of attempted meth trafficking stemming from the 2019 arrest. He was sentenced to an additional 4 years after pleading guilty to a charge of unlawful possession of controlled substance with intent to deliver from a separate case, 2017. Bond took a plea as part of a deal negotiated by his attorney, Thomas Wheeler. Charges of possession and possession with intent to deliver of the same drugs were dropped in the agreement. Sworn affidavits said Bond and an unknown accomplice used fake names to send a package with $89,000 worth of meth via priority mail. A USPS inspector at a Hazelwood, Missouri distribution center reviewed the shipping label of a suspicious package, which was mailed June 7th from Mario Rodriguez to Manuel Medina to a home in the 1400 block of North Monroe Street in Decatur. A canine unit from the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department indicated the presence of a narcotic during the search of the package, the sworn affidavit said. The Postal Service inspector obtained a search warrant for the package and found 890 grams, or 1.96 pounds, of ice methamphetamine. Bond was arrested June 12th after the Decatur Police Department and the USPS set up a sting operation during delivery, the affidavit said. Bond was being held in the Macon County Jail on $100,000 bond and a Class X felony charge of trafficking between 400 and 900 grams of meth. Snowflakes could fall. Out of Decatur by Danette Beckett. Weather conditions for the remainder of the week may provide a slippery morning commute Thursday and Friday, according to the National Weather Service in Lincoln. Meteorologist Matt Barnes said a slow-moving system might impact the latter half of this week. The front moving in is a minor snowfall event affecting central Illinois with a light snow on Wednesday night. Beyond that, during the day Thursday and Friday, temperatures will be well above freezing in the 40s, he said. Then it changes to light rain, with minor accumulation on Wednesday and Thursday night, so it will probably melt. Thursday will have a chance of snow before noon, then a chance of rain and snow mixture. Cloudy with a high near 35. South wind 6 to 9 miles per hour with gusts as high as 15 miles per hour, according to the Weather Service. Chance of precipitation is 50%. If your area receives snow in the morning, Barnes suggests drivers watch for road conditions, especially during morning commute. We may have slushy and slick in spots, he said. We're not dealing with a lot of snow, but it doesn't take a lot to create slippery conditions. Barnes says the weekend may experience a similar weather pattern. The temperatures will be above freezing during the daytime hours. Saturday and Sunday will be in upper 30s, he said. Not too bad for the end of January. Zoning changes, conservation district deal okayed. Out of Decatur by Annalisa Trofimik. Council members on Tuesday approved several zoning ordinance amendments, a contract extension with the Macon County Soil and Water Conservation District, and measures for the extensive Brush College Road project. A new zoning classification, Special Plan Development District, will be used to categorize areas greater than 10 areas for large-scale projects. City Council members voted for a measure that will accommodate multi-phased, integrated, campus-like developments, such as the Community Care Campus and educational institutions, according to city documents. City officials held a public hearing January 2 to modify the current zoning ordinance with the new Special Plan Development District language. Council members also approved 3 zoning amendments for St. Teresa High School at 2710 North Water Street so that the property would have uniform zoning. The zone changes would allow for St. Teresa to do what it wants to do there, City Manager Scott Wrighton said. He said the changes could include electronic signage. An additional zoning change approved by council members on Tuesday include the rezoning of a property at 1975 East Pershing Road. The northern section of the property was zoned M1, intense commercial, and the southern portion was zoned M2, heavy industrial district. Council members on Tuesday voted to continue their partnership with the Macon County Soil and Water Conservation District in reducing sediment, nitrates, and other pollutants in Lake Decatur. The city, since 1988, has funded the Conservation District. The contract extension would call for an expenditure of $154,508, a 2% increase over what the city spent in 2019. "We've been on two-year contracts, and here we are proposing a one-year contract," Wrighton said. "That in no way whatsoever reflects all the work the Conservation District does." He said the council could consider in February a much larger scale scope plan. Depending on what direction that goes, that could change the work of this plan. Some of the duties of the one-year agreement, according to a city memo, include providing technical assistance, research and review recommendations, and public support for watershed management, according to city documents, presenting at least 12 watershed conservation public education programs, and planning watershed conservation cost share projects in the amount of $25,000 annually. The council continues to move forward with the Brush College Road overhaul that has been in the works for a decade. Council members approved two measures Tuesday. The first was to purchase property at 3925 East Logan Street for $28,800. The second resolution related to the project required council approval of using state motor fuel tax funds to cover the expense, which would be reimbursed in full by a State of Illinois Jobs Now grant. The grant has been used for numerous property purchases related to this project in the past. The Brush College Road Improvement Project has several phases, including the overpass at Ferries Parkway, as well as an overpass just a few blocks south to take vehicles over a Norfolk Southern-owned rail yard. Motor fuel tax funds would also cover a $305,114.20 preliminary engineering services agreement with WHKS and Company to provide bridge design services for the Center Street Stevens Creek Bridge. The entire project to improve the bridge that has deteriorating deck beams is estimated to cost $1.6 million, according to city documents. The city has requested $1.28 million in federal surface transportation funding to cover some of the cost to replace the bridge in 2021. Councilman David Horn, at the end of the meeting, raised the point that the city this year completed 60 demolitions of properties on its list of properties deemed unfit for human habitation, which in August listed roughly 200 houses. "This is more than any year since 2009, when we demolished 103 properties. Demolition of these properties is the first step to removing blight and neighborhood revitalization," Horn said. Crow returning to job with Decatur, by Annalisa Trofimik. Officials during a council meeting Tuesday announced the return of former assistant city manager Greg Crow, who will now serve in a new role with the city. Crow will be planning and developing manager, overseeing portions of the council's revitalization efforts. "I am excited to be working for the city again and help with the council's priorities," said Crow after the meeting Tuesday. Crow, who was born and raised in Decatur, in 2011 stepped down from his role as assistant city manager, taking on a job as a client service manager in Champaign with Wisconsin-based private consulting firm MSA Professional Services. In his previous role with Decatur, Crow wore several hats, helping the city draft a sustainability plan, facilitating 350 employees of Archer Daniels Midland Company move to what was the Reynolds Global Technology Center in downtown Decatur. Deputy City Manager John Kindseth said Crow would now assist with the city's Economic Development Department. Kindseth said Crow's salary is $90,000. More local news. Out of Decatur, MRI Director Amy Bliefnick family appear on Family Feud. Macon Resources Incorporated Executive Director Amy Bliefnick and her family recorded a game of Family Feud in the spring of 2019. The family's episode, which includes her husband Ray and three sons, Ted, Tim, and Tom, will finally air at 3 p.m. today on WRSP Fox. The family will have a viewing party at The Wagon, 3190 North Woodford Street, Decatur. A special viewing is planned for the MRI clients on Thursday. Blevnik and her family are unable to speak about the show's outcome until it airs. In 7 months, I haven't told one person, she said. According to Blevnik, the entire experience was enjoyable, including the audition. My middle son, Tim, wanted to try out in Chicago, she said. With five in the family, it made it easy. Family Feud is a game show in which two families battle against each other trying to guess the most popular responses to a survey question. During the audition for the show, the Blevniks and 700 other families competed in practice rounds. According to Amy Blevnik, personality is important. You have to be full of life and spontaneous, she said. More than a month later, the Blevniks learned they would be on the show. Along with the Blevnik parents, who live in Decatur, their three sons traveled from Chicago, Quincy, and Phoenix, Arizona, to be part of the game. The filming took place in May, with the excitement of the show as only part of the fun. The family also took part in tourist activities, including a tour of Hollywood homes. It was a same-day Doris Day died, Blevnik said. I even got interviewed by a TV reporter about Doris Day, an actress and singer who died May 13th. Although they were not allowed to speak about how they did on the show, the family is able to talk about the experience, including the energetic personality of the host, Steve Harvey. He was a lot of fun, and he really worked the crowd. With 250 people in the audience, the Blevniks needed the distraction, but they said they didn't notice the crowd. We were busy competing, Blevnik said. As the mother of the group, Blevnik was originally placed in the middle of the five family members. But after the practice round, the producer moved her to the fourth position. She told me the game is won or lost in the fourth position, Blevnik said, and women are better in the fourth position. The family's experience on the game show was better than expected, Blevnik said. To see the family love is so rewarding, she said. Congressional Candidate Forum, set Sunday. 15th District event will take place at Charleston Library. A forum with the four Democratic Party candidates for the 15th Congressional District is scheduled to take place Sunday at the Charleston Carnegie Public Library. The forum is scheduled for 2:30 to 4 p.m. with the Democratic candidates for the seat. It's set to take place in the Rotary Rooms of the library at the corner of 6th Street and Van Buren Avenue. The party's candidates are Kevin Gaither of Charleston, Erica Weaver of Mattoon, Craig Morton of Salem, and John Hersey of Collinsville. They will face off in the March 17th primary for the chance to meet the winner of the sixth candidate Republican Party primary in the November 3rd general election. The Republican candidates are Mary Miller of rural Oakland, Darren Duncan of Rossville, Carrie Wolf of Altamont, Chuck Ellington of rural Camargo, Kent Gray of Leland Grove, and Kimberly Wade of Grafton. The candidates are running to replace retiring U.S. Representative John Shimkus, a Republican from Collinsville. The Coles Progressives and Charleston Huddle organizations are sponsoring Sunday's forum. Illinois' 15th district is geographically vast and includes Masick, Johnson, Pope, Hardin, Saline, Gallatin, Hamilton, White, Wayne, Edwards, Wabash, Lawrence, Richland, Clay, Marion, Washington, Clinton, Fayette, Effingham, Jasper, Crawford, Clark, Cumberland, Shelby, Moultrie, Coles, Douglas, Edgar, and Vermilion counties, and parts of Ford, Champaign, Madison, and Bond counties. Three juveniles arrested after Rosamond break-in by Valerie Wells. A break-in and vandalism at Faith Bible Christian Academy in Rosamond on Sunday resulted in three arrests, according to the Christian County Sheriff's Office. Deputies responded to a 3 p.m. call and found damage to the security system, computers, trophy cases, and a school-owned van. The suspects had entered a locked door by destroying a door, the sheriff's office said. Video footage showed three suspects, two of whom were enrolled at the school. All three are juveniles whose identity has not been released. The suspects are detained in a juvenile detention facility pending their first court appearance in Christian County. And now, a money story before we take our break. 54% of employers have eliminated a candidate based on social media. Who are you really? That's a question most employers want to know the answer to. Beyond your cover letter and resume or CV, what are you about? Are you trustworthy, respectful, responsible? Are you a hard worker? Will you follow through on promises? According to a survey by CareerBuilder, a full 70% of employers use social media to screen candidates before hiring. Even more striking is the follow-on statistic. 54% of employers studied said they chose not to hire a candidate based on content found on their social media profiles. Of those hiring managers who chose not to hire someone due to their social media presence, the top reasons given for why were that candidates had posted provocative or inappropriate photos, videos, or information, 39%, posted information about drinking or using drugs, 38%, made discriminatory comments related to race, gender, or religion, 32%, badmouthed a previous company or fellow employee, 30%, lied about qualifications, 27%, had poor communication skills, 27%, been linked to criminal behavior, 26%, shared confidential information from previous employers, 23%, had an unprofessional screen name, 22%, lied about an absence, 17%. In other words, getting rid of that video of you doing body shots is probably a good idea. Fortunately, when it comes to hiring practices and social media, the opposite effect is also true. 44% of hiring managers and employers have discovered content on a candidate's social media profile that caused them to actually hire the person. The main reasons for this, according to the employers surveyed, candidates' background information supported their professional qualifications, 38%. Candidate demonstrated great communication skills, 37%. Candidate showed a professional image, 36%. Candidate showed creativity, 35%. It's also not a good idea to just get rid of your social media profiles altogether. Employers didn't like candidates who lacked a social media presence. 57% of employers said they were far less likely to call someone in if that person was an online ghost. Some practical steps to take to do so. If you've never done this, it can be illuminating. You need to know what's out there and where. Consider making profiles private. Just because you're job hunting doesn't mean you need to suppress who you are. It's valid to have an outlet online where you can post about letting your hair down and connecting with your friends. You do need to be selective about where that content goes. Consider making certain social media profiles like Instagram private and don't accept friend requests from your old bosses on there. Also, consider updating your Facebook profile privacy settings so they're not fully public. Review your own social media profiles as if you were an employer. Look at your own social media profiles through the eyes of someone looking to hire you. Are the bios up to date and descriptive of you now? Is the picture professional? This is especially important. A professional image starts with your actual image. Now inspect the posts. Weigh the most important recent posts as most important, but be sure to scroll too. Got questionable memes? Take them down. How about pictures of yourself or ones in which you're tagged? This can be one of the most important and challenging parts of the process. Untag yourself, literally, if necessary. Try to post meaningful content. It doesn't have to be a thesis. It can be as simple as a copy of a poem you particularly like and why. It can be a thoughtful story of a really good customer service interaction you had. That would be good on LinkedIn. It can be a meaningful question put to your community. Remember that 44% of employers have found content on a candidate's social media that caused them to hire that person. So your social media accounts aren't just a liability. They're a chance to show even more of who you are. Again, what employers liked seeing? Background info that supports your professional qualifications, great communication skills, a professional image, and creativity. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for January 22nd, 2020. Please stay tuned.